This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV, and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hey Warren, we haven't spoken for a couple of weeks, not since the federal elections. How do you feel about the Labor landslide?
It's interesting, isn't it? I feel that the opposition, we heard some pretty nasty stuff coming out of that side. So, I was surprised that it was that strong, but I'm not surprised that people turned against the opposition.
It was so interesting to see Dutton give such a so much grace in his speech,
yes,
in concession that night. And it makes you wonder, why wasn't he this person for the campaigning period? I mean, what do we know about politics, really? But then obviously they made really bad choices.
And the other thing is, too, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, who's pulling the strings and who's donating and all of that sort of thing that's going on as well. But, you know, there were some nasty things said by certain members of that party, particularly towards discriminating against people in religious institutions and schools. And I think for me, that was like, well, come on, we don't need to go down to that level. And there were, you know, there were rumours and things about the Trump's campaign advisors being involved, etc. So I don't know. I'm sort of, in some ways, I don't want to reveal any of my political leanings, but I was relieved that we didn't import that stuff from the US, if I can be quite honest with you.
But that influence is very undeniable, is very strong. Mm. I don't think we have that kind of religious fervor that forms the foundation of what's happening in America and in the UK. Mm. I don't think we are quite the same. We don't have the same kind of Christian influence here. But there are certainly small numbers of people who have that level of obsession with Trump politics. And for me, it was really good to have it confirmed. Like, I never believed that we are that sort of people, and it was really good to see that we voted quite, you know, decidedly against that kind of politics.
But, you know, let's face it, there still are the other sides in politics, and as people defect from one party, they go to another party, and that could give power to other minority parties as well that have some extreme views. So, yeah, look, it's over now. Let's hope that they have their majority. They could have a very good reform agenda if they wanted to. Let's see if they've got the guts to do it.
Yes. I am, however, still worried about the influence from, you know, a really powerful country like USA. Mm. I observe what's happening there all the time. I'm really in touch with the news that's happening in the USA. And it's really hard not to be worried because they have so much influence to the extent where it's almost like, you don't really know. It's very hard to foresee how much is going to affect us. But I just know that, you know, when they sneeze, we catch a cold sort of thing. They're so powerful that, you know, that their wingspans are so great. I feel like we are going to be affected over the next 3.5-4 years. But hopefully this election result shows that we have at least some resilience there.
And the other thing is, too, we know that in the US, money does talk, and things aren't looking very good for the economy over there, and prices are certainly increasing in the supermarket. So, and we've seen the back down on some of Trump's tariffs. So hopefully there's a silver lining in that the American people will wake up that these policies don't work and they actually hurt their own country.
Well,
as well as the people.
We have to be hopeful.
I'm being optimistic.
That's all we have to be.
Susie, I'm glad you've got your pulse on politics.
Well, that's because I feel like we are very linked, and which explains as well why I recommended this week's documentary.
That's right. Tell us, what did we watch this week first?
Today we're looking at a film on Tubi, a subscription-free platform that's gaining momentum with its niche categories, including a substantial amount of queer content. The documentary Jamel and Tim deals with the murder of two black gay men in Los Angeles not long ago, in 2017 and 2019. The perpetrator is Ed Buck, an older white man known in political circles for being a frequent donor to the Democratic Party, and in private is a drug user who fetishized black men not only paying them for sexual favors, but also forcing them to imbibe in meth and other illegal substances. When Jamel Moore was found dead in Buck's apartment, authorities did not investigate Buck, even though there is plenty of evidence pointing to wrongdoing, as we see in the film. And not even 2 years later, Timothy Dean was found in similar circumstances at Buck's apartment, and the cops again did nothing. Speculations abounded that it was Buck's political influence that had protected him, along with the institutionalized racism that allowed for black deaths to not be taken seriously. In Jamel and Tim, we observe how homophobia and racism manifests in contemporary times. We think that things have improved for everyone, especially in places like West Hollywood, supposedly one of the most gay-friendly towns in all of USA, but the fact remains that some of us are still disadvantaged in the most unthinkable ways. I found the thorough investigations in Jamel and Tim to be an impressive watch. The film not only digs deep into the criminal cases, but also unpacks the complex social structures and meanings that black queer people navigate every day in modern America. Additionally, the subject of drug use in the rainbow community is explored with some honesty, which can only be helpful. Jamel and Tim is a powerful film, not easy to watch, but it's certainly time well spent if you're able to sit through it. Warren, don't you think documentaries are still so important to how we understand LGBTQIA experiences?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're great. They're a great way of learning about it, particularly about what's going on in another country as well. There was a line in the film that really struck me, and that was about how black queer people are often too often seen only, you know, when they're in pain. And I felt that this documentary went to great lengths to show Jamel and Tim as people, not just headlines, but as people who suffered. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, if we just look at the headlines, we don't get the real story that we get without watching these films, don't you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to position these deaths, because they're drug related, as insignificant. Mm. And I think that's how we consume the news. You know, there's a lot of talk about, missing girls. Like if a little girl is missing and she's blonde and white and pretty, the news laps it up and it becomes really important. And, it it's in the news for days. But if a grown man who's black, who's using drugs and has OD'd, it's almost like, we don't have to think about that. But in this film, we see, you know, that it's so much deeper than that. You know, if we're talking about innocent people, there's no difference really whether the person is 6 years old or 50.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter how they die either, Susie. I feel like we so easily apply a stigma, don't we? We saw it during HIV and AIDS. We see it to when people overdose on something, but we forget, and you and I aren't professionals in this area. We're just two friends having a chat, so bear that in mind. But you do see this stigma around queerness and how it influences how people can sometimes self-medicate to numb that pain, to feel that momentary, I suppose, that connection, that euphoria. It could happen to anyone. It really could. It could happen to any of us. We could all turn that corner and have that. We can't blame them for doing it. We've got to look at ourselves and the environment that we create and why these people turn to these things. And these two people overdosed, and their deaths, they're people. But they were shamed because they overdosed on something, but that happened for a reason.
Yeah, it's really, I don't even know what the word is to describe it. It's just that society does these things to people, right? It makes people, puts people in a position of disadvantage, so that their lives become really hard. And no matter how hard they try to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, it's hard. And then, you know, and then they might have to resort to things that are, you know, a little bit unpalatable to survive. And then, when they don't make it, we only look at it, we often look at it as, you know, oh, they did it to themselves or they made the wrong choices, which is completely crazy.
We stigmatize, I suppose we stigmatize the user, don't we, rather than looking at the systems that lead to the dependency in the first place. And Jemal and Tim, they were both vulnerable in different ways. They were in different ways. They were struggling financially, socially, emotionally. You know, I think...
Yeah, and then vulnerable to the extent that they're so easy to be taken advantage of by someone who was so reckless, you know, and who was so irresponsible and so incredibly selfish. This person, Ed Buck, who, from his behavior, you know, obviously he's a heavy drug user. It looks like he just doesn't. He doesn't see the humanity in other people. Mm. And, you know, if you want to be really generous about it, you can say that, you know, maybe that's how he feels. Maybe he feels like he's so worthless. Therefore, he doesn't understand how to see the value in other people's lives. That, you know, that's a really generous way of saying it. And danger about being too generous is that, you know, people like him evade justice. Although in this case he does get persecuted eventually, which is good.
Susie, there's something about this though. For many of us, grief in queer spaces, it feels different. It's often without, I suppose, the traditional support, and it's been like that for a long time, hasn't it? And I do keep going back to the 90s and the late 80s, when a lot of our community were sick with HIV and dying of AIDS, and, you know, and left on their own, disowned by their families. I feel like as a community, often we don't get the opportunity to grieve in the way that everyone else does. We don't get to be supported like a lot of people do. Not all the time, but just sometimes.
Do you think it's a case of us always feeling like it's such a struggle to survive, and then you kind of can't, almost like grieving possibly involves looking at the pain square in the face? And if your circumstances are too hard, it's almost like we are used or conditioned to looking away, which is why we have a substance abuse and alcohol problem, you know, things like that, where the reality is too hard to look in the face. Therefore, we have to turn away. Maybe it's
easy,
part of that,
to turn away. I mean, so much of this film is about how certain lives are treated as disposable. I mean, have you ever, Susie Rong, felt like you weren't protected by the systems that are meant to keep you safe as well?
I think that's a pretty accurate way of putting it. Although I felt so unprotected by the system that I don't even recognize the system. I always think of the system as something that's outside of me, that it doesn't include me. So I don't even think that it doesn't protect me. I feel like it's something that belongs to other people, and, you know,
but it's not there for you.
It's not built for me. I do feel like, so in that way, I've always, I guess I don't kind of rely on it or have any belief in it, you know. I very much feel like it is up to my own devices. And fortunately, I am one of the trans people who have been able to grow old, you know, and hopefully I get many more decades, because, you know, trans people die young for many, many reasons. But I think a lot of it is just that sense of not being protected or just always being disadvantaged at every corner. Yeah, it's hard to express.
And another thing in the film is there's so much shame around addiction, and I don't think we really talk about it honestly. Do you reckon as a community we avoid these conversations out of fear of being judged by others?
I think so. I think there we don't really have a good language in which to discuss this matter. We don't really know how to talk about it in a way that's fair and helpful, maybe. Mm. But I do feel like it's been a big part of our community. My personal experience with it is probably, you know, it's probably quite useful to discuss. I became completely sober from drugs and alcohol, 15 years ago.
Mm.
And I didn't quite understand why I made that choice at that time. Unlike a lot of people who go sober, I didn't have a moment of disaster or really strong trauma or anything like that. It felt like a gradual change in my personality or sort of my maturation as a grown person at that stage in my late 30s. I think my instinct told me that I needed to live life in a clear way. I need to experience life and not be afraid of life and not turn away from it.
Was it scary?
It wasn't scary because it was the right time. I didn't know that at the time. I know that now because I look back at why I enjoy partying, as many people do, you know, and I think that's great. But I was able to identify the partying to be something, to be a kind of dishonesty, I would say, a kind of a momentary turning away from the hard truths, so that you lose yourself in something that might be euphoric or just a simple pleasure. But something happened at that time. I transitioned around that time where I just valued honesty. And I was challenging myself that I can deal with the honesty no matter how hard it is, because you can take a weekend and look away from it, but you're going to come back to it. So I guess that's my experience of it.
I was talking to a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, actually, who's heavy into drug use, and I said, what is it? What is it about it, particularly when having sex? What is it that keeps you going? And he said, Warren, these people that I have sex with, and it was kind of sad hearing it. He said, they're all out of my league. I wouldn't get them ordinarily. But with this, it opens up a whole new world, and it makes me feel like I'm equal with the rest of the men out there. I found that really sad. I felt like it's almost like an artificial world, but
this
I can understand
like,
that desire to want to be accepted by your own kind.
This sounds like a description of a sensation of freedom to me. It is just kind of letting go, being let go of shame a low self-esteem sort of sensation. I do believe that that's what people get, a lot of what people get from drugs and alcohol is that freedom from the sort of negative feelings that one might have for themselves.
But those external negative feelings that, you know, we're told something's wrong with us or you're not good enough or you can't have sex with these sorts of people.
Yeah. So you can take you can be intoxicated and deal with it, or I would say that you can find other ways to deal with it. I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm not saying that everybody can do it. People experience it at different levels. Some have greater trauma than others, but you know, it's dangerous. It's dangerous if drugs and alcohol is the answer to it, because then it never goes away. Like I said, after the weekend, you've got to come back to square one, you know? But if you're able to find a way to work with it, to deal with it, then hopefully you diminish the power it has over you.
The other thing is too, is it can complicate consent. You know, as we see in this movie, Jemal and Tim, is exploitative situations can often be masked as consensual if both parties are high.
Yeah, and there's also that element of Ed Buck paying them. Mm. And then they feel like, first of all, they owe him a service. And second, you know, they want to be in his good books and be able to, you know, continue receiving that payment from him. And then there's a lot of kind of racial stuff in there that's really hard to unpack for us who don't live there, you know, because that crosses, that mixes in with how we observe the police department was kind of really dealing with their deaths as being insignificant, like it's they're so used to it, you know, and these deaths happened before 2020, where, you know, the whole Black Lives Matters became prominent, and then we were able to see that the American police forces are very used to, you know, treating Black deaths as being unimportant.
We're speaking with Susie Rong about Jemel and Tim. It's a haunting and beautiful film that pays tribute to two Black gay men whose lives were cut short but not forgotten. Susie Rong, I love our chats. They're always really good. It is Radiothon week here at Joy. I just want to ask you, it's all about stronger together and connection here at Radiothon and at Joy. Why is Joy so important to you, Susie?
You know, we can be drawn to isolation. I think trans people especially find safety in isolation, and places like platforms like Joy allows us to connect even when we feel like physically it's harder for us to go out and be in amongst groups. You know, sometimes even just going to a queer bar can be a challenging idea. So the radio is always on. The radio is always there at a flick of a button. And it gives us a lot of community as Joy has for the almost 4 years for me.
I know. It's been a fabulous 4 years though, Susie.
It's really great. And you know, I can't imagine losing it. I think it'll be such a tragedy. But for it to continue thriving, everyone has to pitch in.
Susie, it's always a good pleasure to chat with you. Good pleasure. How's that?
It is a pleasurable pleasure to chat with you, Warren.
Susie, what are we watching next week?
Some of us will remember a groundbreaking movie from 1993, The Wedding Banquet, originally directed by Ang Lee. Well, it's now back, completely made over for a new generation. Catch it now at cinemas everywhere. There'll be lots to discuss about The Wedding Banquet when I see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.